Hello, I'm Alton Banks for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, we crack open the Triangle Business Journal for this week, and in the first page, we find the biz page, which has four or five small columns, and I'll begin with the heading of New Taste. The article is entitled, Move Over Chick-fil-A, Here's BB's. Chef Ashley Christensen is opening her newest restaurant in a part of Raleigh that's rapidly gaining traction thanks to Wegmans. Christensen rocketed to success when she reimagined Poole's Downtown Diner, which dated to the 1940s. Now she's planning her own take on the chicken sandwich as she opens BB's Crispy Chicken on October the 30th at the Midtown East Shopping Center on Wake Forest Road. Other locations are planned for Cary and Durham. From the start, we've wanted to highlight the overall greatness of the chicken sandwich, Christensen says. Also knew we wanted to share this with the world, so it brought a completely different level of focus for me and necessity for sensational flavor profiles throughout the menu. And under the heading of small business comes the article New Funding Initiative. Carolina Community Impact, a community development financial institution that was formed recently, has launched a fund to provide financing to area small businesses with support from crowdfunded loan platform Kiva and the MetLife Foundation. The initiative includes a standard loan offering of $20,000 to $100,000 to qualifying small businesses, as well as a Kiva program, that's K-I-V-A, a Kiva program that would help businesses raise funds from their existing networks and gain access to a crowdfunding platform to unlock additional funding opportunities. We expect many of the entrepreneurs that get their initial funding with CCI will go on to graduate to use other lending sources that further expand their business operations down the road. That's what success looks like, says Joseph Battle, CCI's Program Director of Business Services. We encourage women, minority, and other small business owners, as well as organizations that work with entrepreneurs, to connect with Carolina Community Impact to learn more about this platform and partnership opportunities. And under the heading of Investors, the article Novel Idea for Toys grabs attention. A Durham company that focuses on toys for children is grabbing some adult-size investments. Rachel Classy left a job at Teamworks last year to be with her two kids and soon saw how many plastic toys were in her home. If you're a mom, you know, she says. So she launched Tiny Earth Toys in Durham, which sends families high-quality toys made from a natural material for a four-month stretch. Then families send the toys back and get a new crate of products. Within just days of Classy publishing the website, 100 families had signed up, and local investors have noticed. Securities filings show the company just closed on an equity funder worth nearly $1.5 million, led by Bull City Venture Partners. I'm a father of three kids, 10, 8, and 6, and, you know, I have firsthand seen the problem with having a bunch of plastic toys in my house that accumulate, Bull City Venture Partners co-founder Jason Kaplan says. And under the heading of Law comes the article, New Firm Enters Triangle Management. Tennessee law firm Baker Donaldson has expanded into the Triangle, which is becoming an increasingly competitive market in the legal field. The firm has added a team of six North Carolina lawyers, led by local health care lawyers Kenneth Burgess and Matthew Wolf, formerly of Poynter, Spruill, and Parker Poe, respectively. The Triangle attorneys are part of an expansion of the firm's health practice, but they also make up Baker Donaldson's first North Carolina presence. And under the heading of Target Coming comes the article, Sand Hills Shopping Center Approved. Southern Pines has approved preliminary plans for the first phase of a major development that will bring the first Target to Moore County. Plans for the initial phase of Morganton Park South include 221,000 square feet of retail space on about 35.7 acres. The entire Morganton Park South project encompasses nearly 100 acres and includes plans for a Target, up to 650 new residences, and up to 400,000 square feet of office space. The proposed development would sit in between Morganton Road and U.S. 15501, near where Southern Pines borders Pinehurst and Aberdeen. There's a lot of site activity that has to occur, but we would anticipate opening the first phase of the project in October of 2023. John Silverman, managing principal of Midland Atlantic Properties, previously told TBJ. And finally, on the biz page, under the heading of Courting Locations, comes the article, ACC Looks Beyond Greensboro. All of a sudden, the most interesting competition in the Atlantic Coast Conference is for the ACC itself, and it's an opportunity that's ripe for the Triangle. To the surprise of no one, the ACC announced October 26 that it's looking beyond Greensboro for a future home. Back in August, new Commissioner Jim Phillips confirmed the league had hired Newmark, an advisory firm based in Texas, to evaluate its headquarters options. The ACC is now based right beside the Grandover Resort and has been a fixture in Greensboro since the league began in 1953. The ACC's Board of Directors, chaired by Duke University President Vincent Price, is now asking Newmark to evaluate other sites in the Eastern Time Zone. What's telling is the league is putting an emphasis on markets with a growing population, an airport that serves as a major hub, and financial considerations related to operating expenses. The conference only has a staff of about 50, but the league handles a colossal amount of money. The leader is probably Charlotte, with its robust airport and ESPN studio. Charlotte also has a deeper pool of major companies than the Triangle. But Raleigh-Durham International Airport has plenty of flights to key ACC markets such as Boston and Miami, and the market is home to three ACC schools. And its long-term growth trajectory is impressive. Phillips gave a glimpse into the ACC's thinking in August when he told the Richmond, Virginia Times-Dispatch, should conference headquarters be aligned with media opportunities? Should it be aligned with Fortune 100, 200, 500 companies? Should it be aligned with corporate sponsorship opportunities? Should it be aligned with a city that could host championships or does host championships? That's what needs to be looked at. Are we leaving some money out there? Next, we turn to the tech and startups page of this week's Triangle Business Journal. And under the heading of Edible Spoons comes the article, Night in the Tank Sparks Sales Windfall. In 2 days, Morrisville entrepreneur Dinesh Tadapalli saw a revenue bump of $50,000 after his startup, Incredible Eats, made its Shark Tank debut October 22nd. And that's just in pre-orders, as the product, edible spoons intended to replace plastic disposable utensils, isn't actually shipping for a few months as Tadapalli continues to scale. They understand my passion, Tadapalli says, of viewers of the ABC store, where founders pitch their companies to big-name investors. They understood this just isn't for money, but also for impact. Tadapalli, as he told the Sharks, wants to change the world, replacing plastic utensils entirely. And they bought it, with all four Sharks making offers. Lori Greiner of Home Shopping Network fame was the one to make a deal, which as of recently was still in negotiations, according to Tadapalli. I was not willing to say it's too expensive. It won't work out. I think everyone liked my passion, Tadapalli says. Todd Apolli, who recently moved his company from California to Morrisville, asked for $500,000 on the show in exchange for 7% of the company, telling the Sharks, "My question is not who wants to invest in us, but who wants to join us to save the planet one straw or one spoon at a time." "That passion is exactly what it's going to take for you to succeed," said Daniel Lebetsky, founder of Kind LLC. He, along with Greiner, Kevin O'Leary, and Mark Cuban, would all make offers, with Greiner's $500,000 for 15%, getting the handshake at the end of the show. And under the heading of increasing reach, comes the article, "NC State grad turned social media influencer launches Raleigh startup called Rella." A day in the life of influencer Natalie Barbu, the co-founder of Raleigh-based Rella, is hard work, as she's the filmmaker, editor, producer, actor, model, and promoter of her own content. It's so hard, in fact, that she thought there had to be a better way to manage her own content. "This is a career," she says, "of influencing. People are making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Some people are making millions of dollars a year." Barbu and her fellow NC State University cohorts founded Rella, currently raising $500,000. It's creating a platform set to be released in December that helps influencers manage their content across social media platforms. And also on the Tech Startups page under the heading for expansion is Ways for Business Steers to Wilmington. A New York market research firm selling itself as the Ways for Business, that's W-A-Z-E, Ways for Business, has tapped Wilmington for a new technology hub. SUSE, which aims to advance human understanding between consumers and enterprises everywhere at the speed of culture, announced plans to add 40 jobs over the next 3 years in downtown Wilmington. Ways is a popular app that provides guidance for traffic. The news comes just months after the firm closed on a $50 million equity round. CEO Matt Britton credits Chief Technology Officer William Mansfield, a Wilmington resident, with the decision to expand in North Carolina. Britton says Mansfield proved Wilmington was a hotbed of talent and that it made sense to invest. And next we turn to the Greater Triangle Growth page of this week's TBJ. Longtime listeners will probably know that this is a fairly recent addition to the journal and talks a lot about the growth occurring in the Greater Triangle, obviously. And the first article today is under the heading of Anchor Tenant, and the article is entitled Playcon Makes a Move into Wilson Facility. Now, forgive me if I've mispronounced it. It's spelled P-L-A-C-O-N, and I'm going to pronounce it Playcon, with apologies if that's not correct. A large manufacturing plant in Wilson won't be vacant for long. Madison, Wisconsin-based Playcon plans to hire more than 80 employees at its new location at 2450 Wilco Boulevard in Wilson. Playcon makes custom and stock plastic packaging. In addition to expanding our national footprint into the Southeast, Playcon is thrilled to have such a talented pool of employees join our family, says Dan Gilbert, Chief Financial Officer of Playcon. "The welcome we have received by this community has been amazing." Playcon is expanding to a facility which is 112,000 square feet that was previously run by Sunoco Products. Playcon reached an agreement to purchase substantially all of the operating equipment at the plant. Sunoco, a packaging products manufacturer based in Hartsville, South Carolina, told staff in July that it would be laying off all 138 employees because of historically declining volumes exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. The move by Playcon means the manufacturing plant will not have sat vacant for long, as Sunoco said this summer it was planning to close the plant September 30th. The Wilson facility will help Playcon keep up with customer demand in the medical and retail spaces, In addition to this site, the company has manufacturing locations in Madison, Wisconsin, Elkhart, Indiana, Plymouth, Minnesota, and West Springfield, Massachusetts. And in a small article that might strike your fancy if you're a little hungry, under the heading of Growth Signs, is Rocky Mount lands its first Chipotle. At long last, Rocky Mount is getting a Chipotle. The restaurant chain, known for its big burritos, plans to open a location at 959 North Wesleyan Boulevard in the spring, according to the company. The chain has 70 other locations in North Carolina, including 7 in Raleigh, 5 in Durham, and spots in Cary, Chapel Hill, Apex, Smithfield, and other Triangle towns. David Ferris, president and CEO of the Rocky Mount Area Chamber of Commerce, sees the restaurant coming to town as a sign of the city's growth. It's another clear indication that Rocky Mount is in play with a lot of businesses, from restaurants like Chipotle to advanced manufacturing and logistics, Ferris says. And under the heading of New Homes comes the article, Planned Sanford Development Faces Opposition. A Raleigh developer is looking to bring hundreds of new homes to Sanford. The Sanford City Council held a public hearing on October 19th on whether to rezone 169 acres to allow for the Brookshire Conditional Zoning District along Boone Trail Road. The developers listed as Pinnacle Partners LLC, which shares an address with Raleigh-based Duke Lazara Development. Plans for the Brookshire Conditional Zoning District are ambitious, including 404 single-family home lots, commercial development, and an apartment complex. Sanford held the meeting at the Dennis A. Wicker Civic Center. Several residents spoke up against the project. Their reasons included increased traffic, higher crime, and threats to wildlife. Next, we turn to Caleb Harshberger's real estate page. This week's Triangle Business Journal, and under the heading of Mixed Use, comes the article, New Tower About to Rise Above Durham. After years of planning, a Colorado developer appears poised to soon begin work on its latest downtown Durham tower, calling for a 27-story mixed-use multifamily building and a planned opening date in 2024. Austin Lawrence Partners recently unveiled its plans for the Novus, featuring 54 condominiums and 188 rental apartments over ground floor retail. The project is ALP's latest in Durham and would join the One City Center Tower in the firm's portfolio. We're deeply interested in the continued growth and development of Durham because we personally know what an incredible place to live, work, and play it is, says Greg and Jane Hills, ALP's founders. We are thrilled to share our vision for the Novus and bring this luxury living concept to the area. Novus, by way of interest, is spelled N-O-V-U-S. We're looking forward to continuing to engage with the community and showcase milestones along the way over the next few years. The property is situated at 400 West Main Street at Durham's Five Points intersection. ALP bought the property in 2013 for $6 million, according to county records, and has been planning to redevelop the site for years. The tower is the first of two phases of development ALP has planned for the site. Phase one will include the residential high-rise, with estimated completion by the end of 2024. ALP plans to release plans for phase two next year. The list of amenities planned at the Novus Tower is long. ALP is planning to bring a pool with private cabanas, hot tubs, plunge pool, steam room, and a massage room, outdoor yoga area, a pickleball court, putting green, and a pair of golf simulators, outdoor movie theater, a dog park with covered area, and 2,000 square feet of covered common area. The project will also feature co-working spaces, including offices, conference, and common area space, something that's becoming increasingly common in high-end multifamily projects around the area. The developer says there will be a wide range of units and pricing, and 40% of the condo units have already been reserved. And also in Durham comes the heading, Developers team up. We'll revamp old warehouse. Two real estate firms bought an assemblage of properties in downtown Durham. Center Studio Architectures' Scott Harmon and White Oak Properties' Jed and Roland Gammon paid $3 million for 800, 814, 816, and 18 Henderson Street and 809 East Ramseur Street. It includes a 65,000-square-foot cotton warehouse built in 1916 on a former Hosiery Mills campus. It's one of the few remaining structures on that campus, Harmon says. We're going to be doing a mixed-use office restaurants retail project there that'll have some smaller and flexible office spaces. Well, next we turn the page and we reach the healthcare higher ed page of this week's journal. And under the heading of drug manufacturing comes the article, Locus Bio adds cash and plans adding workers. A Marshall drug maker with multiple assets at different clinical phases has secured $25 million through a credit facility with a venture lender. Locus Biosciences will use the financing from Hercules Capital Inc., which will be available to the company in tranches over the next 12 to 14 months, to invest in both its manufacturing and discovery processes, says Paul Garofalo, company co-founder and CEO. On the manufacturing side, this means investing in a facility that the six-year-old startup commissioned in late 2020. The majority of the drug products the company produces for preclinical and clinical trials are liquid-based, and the company is beginning to invest in oral solid doses. Locus will also invest in the automated equipment it uses to scan environmental samples for bacteriophage, a virus that's evolved to attack bacteria and not human cells. While this debt funding will be used on capital investments, the company is relying on its growing revenue to hire more employees. Locus started this year with about 55 employees and has grown to around 80, with plans to reach 100 employees soon. The company, a spin-out from NC State University, has secured a number of other significant deals since its inception to advance its development of engineered bacteriophage treatments for bacterial and inflammatory diseases. The company's first asset is under a $144 million program with the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority. Through this, the company is developing a treatment for E. coli bacteria that causes recurrent urinary tract infections. And in early 2019, the company entered into an agreement with Janssen Pharmaceuticals and its parent company, Johnson & Johnson, potentially worth up to $818 million. Locus is developing drugs for respiratory and bloodstream infections under this agreement. Thank you. Well, that doesn't look good. Now, the next section of Triangle Business Journal takes up 28 pages in the printed journal, and so I cannot read all of these since it's the Fast 50. This grouping is called the Fast 50 because these 50 companies are the heartbeat of the Triangle's growing economy. They're creating jobs, entering new markets, and implementing immersive workforce cultures. So what I'm going to do is read the title and their location, the number of employees, their description, and the president or CEO. And the first listing here is Go Prime Mortgage, located in Apex with 187 employees. It's described by the president, John Rogers, as a veteran-owned mortgage company. Next on the list is Spoonflower, located in Durham, has 350 employees, and Michael Jones, the CEO, describes it as a leading textiles e-commerce enabler, connecting 3.3 million creatives in the creative economy. And next at number three is Inserve Corp. Inserve Corp is located in Fuquay's Arena, and it is described by Mark Youngquist as president, as a specialty trades industrial consulting firm, and it has 240 employees. Number five on our list, number four on our list is Crossrope, located in Raleigh. Has 33 employees, and its CEO, David Hunt, describes it as providing jump rope fitness experience through patented ropes and app workouts. Number five is Trial Card, located in Morrisville, described by its CEO, as Joe Abdullah, as a life sciences commercialization partner with 1,500 employees. Number six is Riccobini Associates Family Dentistry, and they are located in Cary. And Dr. Michael Riccobini, who is the CEO of the company, describes it, of course, as dental care. They have 850 employees. And the company listed number seven is Homes by Dickerson, located in Raleigh. And Brant Chesson, the president, describes this as a new home builder with 51 employees. Number eight, Cap Trust, also in Raleigh. Fielding Miller is the co-founder and CEO of Cap Trust, and he describes it, of course, as an investment advisor. They have 983 employees. Number ninth on our list is J.D. Beam Incorporated. Tom Antone is the president and chief operating officer, and he describes it as a commercial construction firm. They are located in Raleigh, and they have 26 employees. Number 10 on the list is Capital City Homes. They are located in Raleigh, and they have a couple of guys who are member managers, Trey McDonald and Jason Morrow. Located in Raleigh, they are a regional home building company with 27 employees. Number 11 is Pendo, located in Raleigh. Has 750 employees. Todd Olson is the CEO and co-founder, and he describes the company as a software company. Bob Rosilli is president and chief commercial officer of global business for number 12. That's Bioproducts Laboratory, located in Durham. Rosilli describes this as a plasma-derived therapy for rare and orphan diseases, and they have 34 employees. Number 13 on our list is BioAgilytics, located in Durham with 785 employees. Jim Dayton, their president and CEO, describes the business as a contract research organization. Number 14 is Gilero, located in Morrisville, with 84 employees. Todd Mosler, CEO and founder, describes Gilero as a medical and drug delivery device concern. Number 15 is Longfellow Real Estate Partners, located in Durham. Jessica Brock is partner of real estate operations. with 125 employees in Durham. She describes the organization as commercial real estate. Number 16 is Vets Pets, and they are located in Wilson. Steve Thomas is the CEO, and he describes this company as one to provide practice management to veterinarians and their teams. They have 491 employees. Number 17 is located in Raleigh. Chuck Smith is president of Allegiance Contracting Group, and he describes their company as Site Work Construction. He has 100 employees. Number 18 is Sift Media, and Judd Bowman is founder and CEO of Sift Media. They're located in Durham. Bowman describes it as a company that develops AI and machine learning algorithms to hyper-target app install ads, and his company currently has 17 employees. Number 19 is McAdams. Then they are located in Durham. Mike Munn is president and CEO. Munn describes the company as design consultants specializing in land planning, landscape architecture, civil engineering, land surveying, and construction administration. And McAdams runs this with 358 employees. Number 20 is the SASR Workforce Solutions. Located in Raleigh with Patrick Henderson as president and CEO, they have 72 corporate employees, 12,500 field associates. And Henderson says his company provides dependable industry and supply chain workforce solutions for the U.S. retail industry. And number 21, Insight Software, headed by Jim Triandafloo, he's CEO. Located in Raleigh, they have more than 1,000 employees, and Triandafloo describes his company as financial reporting and enterprise performance management software. Number 22 on the list is the Jim Allen Group, Coldwell Banker, Howard Perry, and Walston. Headed by Jim Allen, president and CEO. The company is located in Raleigh with 70 employees, and Allen describes his company as residential real estate. Number 23, located in Cary, is Dude Solutions. That's D-U-D-E. Kevin Kimmerer is CEO, and Kimmerer describes his company as software as a service provider of operations management solutions. And Dude Solutions has 575 employees. Number 24 is Creo, C-R-E-O. Located in Durham, Creo, the CEO is Susan Acker Walsh. And she describes the company as manufacturing consulting for life sciences, healthcare, technology services, and private equity clients. And there are 44 employees. Number 25 is WorkSmart. Located in Durham, Clay Harris, the president and CEO, describes this company as a provider of managed IT services, including backup and recovery, cybersecurity, and Microsoft 365 implementation support. He works there with 115 employees. Number 26, Professional Builder Supply, located in Morrisville. Van Isley is the CEO. Van works with 646 employees, and they do sales and distribution of building materials to the professional contractor. Number 27 is headed up by Anthony Rotoli. Rotoli is the CEO. They're located in Chapel Hill, and Rotoli describes his business as Global Education Engagement Solutions. And the number of employees is 75. Number 28, U.S. Radiology Specialists, located in Raleigh. John Perkins is chairman and CEO. And Perkins describes this company as a radiology company with physician practices and more than 160 imaging centers across 14 states and he has 3,600 employees. Number 29 is My Computer Career. Tony Galati is the CEO. It's located in Holly Springs. They have 750 employees. And Galati describes this as a technical college that provides information technology training, certifications, and job placement assistance. Number 30, Affordable Care, located in Morrisville, is headed up by Gene Kurtzer. And Kurtzer describes it as consumer retail health care company focused on dental services. And Kurtzer operates this with 4,400 employees. Number 31 is Exeter Building Company, located in Raleigh. John Finan is a partner, and he describes that as a luxury custom home builder. He has 16 employees. Scott Byers heads up number 32. That's Majestic Kitchen and Bath. It's located in Youngsville. Byers describes this as a provider of stone countertops, cultured marble, glass kitchen, and bath accessories. He has 260 employees. Number 33 is Kurt Von Koch as a CEO and chairman. The business is called FM Systems. Located in Raleigh, it's described as a digital workplace solution, and he has 225 employees. Number 34, a familiar name to many people, with Tim Clancy as a president. This is Clancy and Thays Construction Company, located in Raleigh. It's described, of course, as a construction manager, design builder, and general contractor, and currently having 350 employees. Number 35 is a company called Withers Ravenel. Jim Canfield is the president and CEO. It's located in Cary and Raleigh, described as a civil and environmental engineering concern with 330 employees. Number 36 is Fleet Feet, located in Carrboro. Joey Pointer is president and CEO. Pointer describes it as a provider of running shoes and equipment, and he has 566 employees. Number 37 is the company Lynch Mikens. Anna Lynch is the CEO. They're located in Raleigh, described as a structural engineering firm. They have 62 employees. Number 38 is Eric Wang, CEO of the Prometheus Group. Located in Raleigh, the Prometheus Group has approximately 1,000 employees, and they are described as an enterprise asset management solution provider. Number 39 is Carolina Restoration Services of North Carolina. Travis Bailey and Lisa Bailey are president and vice president, respectively. They're located in Morrisville, and their company's description is property damage restoration, with 101 employees. Now we reach number 40 out of this week's Fast 50 Awards, and that the company is called Catalyst Clinical Research. Kathy Bradrick is a senior vice president of resourcing operations. They're located in Raleigh. They have 324 employees, and the company does clinical research. Number 41 is a company called Synchrogistics. Erica Jackson is the president. They have 30 employees. Located in Raleigh, they do third-party logistics. Number 42 is Muter Construction. That's M-U-T-E-R, Muter Construction. They are located in Zebulon, and Beth Muter is the CEO, and is described as a woman-owned commercial construction firm with 38 employees. Number 43 on our list is Windswept. Located in Garner, Jay Strickland is the CEO of Windswept. And Strickland describes this as a provider of managed IT services and cybersecurity systems, and he has 56 employees. Number 44 is the Select Group. That's George Karakostantis as CEO. Karakostantis describes his company as a provider of IT managed solutions, professional services, and project-based resources. They're located in Raleigh and they have 1,369 employees. Number 45, the company is Bobbitt, and the CEO is Brian Dinosaur. They're located in Raleigh. They have 75 employees, and Dinosaur describes his company as general contractors. Number 46 is AdWerks. That's AdWerx. They're located in Durham. Jed Carlson is the CEO. They have 149 employees, and they do customer relationship advertising solutions. Number 47 is Store Office Equipment. They're located in Raleigh. Tom Vander Oost is their CEO, and he describes their business as a workspace developer. He has 205 employees. Number 48 is Validic. That's V-A-L-I-D-I-C. They're located in Durham. Drew Schiller is the CEO, and they have 70 employees. And Schiller describes this business as scalable digital health solutions. Number 49 is a company called Spreedly. That's S-P-R-E-E-D-L-Y. Justin Benson is the CEO of Spreedly. They're located in Durham, and Benson describes Spreedly as a company specializing in digital transactions. He has 130 employees. And number 50 is 919 Marketing. David Chapman is the CEO, and they are located in Holly Springs. Chapman describes the company as a national content marketing, public relations, and digital marketing agency. And Chapman has 38 employees. That finishes these 50 companies. They're not listed in any specific order, alphabetically or via location or whatever. Each of these companies has about a half a page in this week's journal, so obviously I've given all of these companies short shrift, but I wanted to make sure you knew of all the CEOs or presidents, the names of the companies and their locations, and what they do. So I hope you've enjoyed this speed course in the Fast 50 Awards. All of these companies should be heartily congratulated. And we have a few small articles here before we call it quits for this week's Triangle Business Journal. And under the heading of Around the State comes the article, Charlotte Leaders Watch Winston's Success. At 2 million square feet and growing, Winston-Salem's Innovation Quarter grabbed the attention of Charlotte political and business development leaders during a visit October 25th. The group included Mayor Vi Lyles, County Commissioners Board Chair George Dunlap, and executives from the Charlotte Regional Business Alliance, who spent 2 hours exploring medical school labs, revamped tobacco and power plants, and attractions including a public park, a brewery, and restaurants. Anchored by the Wake Forest University School of Medicine, the Innovation Quarter took shape over the past 20 years. Graydon Pleasance, head of real estate development at the School of Medicine, said the medical school district is meant to adapt and evolve with new social, academic, and business trends. To date, combined private and public investment totals $900 million, with another 10 buildings planned for the next 28-acre phase. The district encompasses 330 acres downtown. R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company donated 45 acres. Wake Forest bought the rest of the land. The school's executive vice dean, Terry Hales, stressed the importance of making the entire community feel welcome and included in the district. Examples of that, beyond shared public spaces such as a 1.6-acre park and a 1.7-mile urban greenway connecting to other paths, can be found in upcoming apartment projects that will include priority for affordable housing and senior living. The tour was part of a Charlotte campaign to encourage support for as much as $75 million of city and county incentives for Charlotte's planned innovation district. Atrium Health, Wake Forest Baptist Health, and Wake Forest University are collaborating on a planned medical school campus in Midtown Charlotte, scheduled to open in 2024. Part of the concept here is to coordinate and enhance research and technology between the existing Winston-Salem corridor and what's built in Charlotte. It's probably one of the most, if not the most, transformational opportunities the city of Charlotte has or is going to have for a long time, Republican Councilman Tariq Bukhari said after touring the medical district. His colleagues seemed equally impressed, though being impressed and determining appropriate incentives are different matters. Lyles endorsed incentives in general for the medical school district last month. And in another article on the Around the State page under the heading Cary Home Builder Targets Grandover. A Triangle-based home builder is set to enter the Triad market with a high-profile community. Garman Homes of Cary has been contracted to build the homes at Montrose Village at Grandover, a new residential neighborhood developed by Koury Corporation near Grandover Resort. Several of the 100 or so homes will be along the fairways of Grandover's west course. Montrose Village is off Post Bridge Drive near Pemberton Road and Grandover Swim and Racquet Club. Betty Smith of Smith Marketing and Allen Tate Realtors said Garman would build three types of homes: single family of approximately 2,300 to 2,700 square feet, duplexes from about 1,900 to 2,300 square feet, and cottages ranging from around 1,000 to 1,500 square feet. Smith said most of the single-family homes and duplexes would be on the golf course on the edges of the new neighborhood. The cottages will be in the middle of the development. And one of our last articles this week under the heading of A Better World comes the nonprofit brief Cary Foundation announces grant recipients. The Board of Advisors of the Cary Community Foundation recently announced $4,270 in local grant awards from its Community Grant-Making Fund. The board granted $1,000 to Made For Me, Inc., $1,000 to the Center for Volunteer Caregiving, $1,000 to Family Promise of Wake County, and $1,270 to NAMI Wake County. Board President Mike Stelpflug noted, "We're honored to make grants that create lasting change for our community," he said. "These organizations are meeting critical local needs that we're proud to support on behalf of our donors." Well, now we come to the last page of the Triangle Business Journal, which is the viewpoint page. And as you know, the editor has an article on this. So the editor-in-chief has written the following article, "Not the Time to Take on Business and Personal Debt." A little less a month away from Black Friday, it looks like America is ready to spend, this time even bigger than pre-pandemic levels. The latest numbers from the Federal Reserve show credit card outstanding balances for Americans have once again inched above the $1 trillion mark in August, as economists now estimate the outstanding balance to move past $1.1 trillion easily in the fourth quarter. This means credit card issuers are ecstatic. The average rate of assessed interest on credit cards are beginning to move north as well, from 16.3% in June to 17.13% in August. But for the rest of the economy, as inflation fears increase, given the operational assault on the supply chain, this is the worst time to pile on debt, both for businesses and individuals. Two major facts. One, inflation fears are real. You don't have to look deep to see what's happening to gas prices, which just jumped about 50% in 2021. Now add the price increase in almost every product we consume, and the dollar's not able to stretch the way it was just a few months ago. Granted, the nation's supply chain is causing much of the problems right now, but dollars are disappearing from American wallets at a faster rate. Banks are openly saying customers are beginning to draw down on their balances. J.P. Morgan Chase Chief Financial Officer Jeremy Barnum recently opined that the bank is noticing customers are using their cards to borrow and are drawing down their savings to customary levels. Basically, collective spending already has or is about to hit normal levels after the pandemic dampened banks' loan growth. When customers have higher levels of debt, stress levels will start to rise. A recent survey done by the National Endowment for Financial Education concluded for people grappling with credit card debt, 21% of the surveyed people noted credit card debt is causing them stress. All this after we kept getting money from the government and paid down our debt in the past 19 months. We're now witnessing a complete reversal even before the start of the holiday shopping season. So let's assume the world will figure out how to mitigate most of the supply chain issues in the next quarter, as long as COVID infections don't reappear with a vengeance in various parts of the world. What does the economy look like then? There's every indication, given some of the warning signs, that the Federal Reserve will indicate a tapering of the stimulus by cutting their $120 billion bond purchase activity each month. That inevitably will start the conversion of higher interest rates. So, if we have a little more money in our savings account, we may actually start to see some gradual gains, as saving rates will go up as well. Conversely, if we are adding debt, we will see more of our money going to pay off the debt as borrowing becomes expensive. In the past few days, Bank of America Chairman Brian Moynihan discounted the notion that a rate hike could create havoc on the economy. Instead, he maintained the economy should be able to handle the Fed's actions. But I'm more worried about the tendencies we're portraying by increasing our credit card debt once again. It may help the stock market, but it's not going to help an average citizen with average wages and a higher interest rate environment. We get to the guest column in this week's Triangle Business Journal. That column is written by John Hood, who is a member of the John Locke Foundation board. His article is entitled, We Need More School Boards. A year ago, would you have correctly guessed that meetings of local school boards would be among the most politically charged events of 2021? If so, more power to you. I would have gotten the question wrong. That's not to say I mind it. School boards have long deserved more public attention. In fact, I've become such a fan of local school board meetings that I think we should increase their frequency by creating more school boards. North Carolina school systems are abnormally large. We have just 115 districts. That's far lower than in such similarly populated states as Georgia with 180, Pennsylvania with 500, Michigan with 537, New Jersey with 564, and Ohio with 610. Over time, most states have been reducing their school district counts. The arguments for consolidation included lower administrative costs, savings from bulk purchases of goods and services, greater socioeconomic diversity, and less confusion among parents and taxpayers. Some of these benefits were, in fact, realized, but primarily by merging tiny districts with a few hundred students into modestly sized districts with a few thousand students. While there's some debate about the precise inflection point, I think a fair reading of the available evidence is that beyond that point, consolidating districts is counterproductive. It results in a diseconomy of scale, raising rather than lowering the cost of school operations. It also appears to harm student performance, everything else being equal. When I say there is some debate about the inflection point, I mean that some education researchers think it's around 2,000 to 4,000 students. Others think it's in the low tens of thousands. Alas, North Carolina's largest systems exceed these thresholds. Wake County's district enrolls nearly 160,000 students, Charlotte-Mecklenburg 140,000, Guilford 69,000, Forsyth 51,000, and Cumberland 49,000 are also quite big. While I've long advocated dividing the Wake and Mecklenburg systems into three or four districts, I'm open to the idea that the other urban systems should be subdivided as well. My main argument has long been that giving parents more choices among district-run public schools would improve both academic quality and family satisfaction. The most recent study I've read on the subject dates from 2017. Katie Sharon of Florida State University and Lawrence Kenny of the University of Florida explored the fact that some districts require there to be only one school district per county, while others impose no such requirement. We find strong evidence that restricting competition among public school districts has an adverse impact on student learning, they found. Over the past few months, friction between parents and school boards has illustrated yet another argument for creating more districts. It may ensure a better alignment of values. Don't like how your local school districts handle COVID or what they may be teaching your children? Complain if you like, but that may not yield timely or satisfactory results. Another reasonable response to the problem would be to put your children in another nearby district where the school board's preferences better fit your own. That would be a lot easier to accomplish if there were more districts to choose from, at least within North Carolina's largest metropolitan areas. More districts would mean, of course, more school boards and more elections to fill those school boards. I can live with that. What about you? Well, that music means we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Alton Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.